Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. The 73rd Tony Awards ceremony will broadcast this Sunday, June 9th, on CBS. Many of the nominees have come by the All of It studios this past year for conversations about their shows. We'll be bringing you excerpts of those conversations this week as we look ahead in anticipation of the awards show. Today, we're featuring two conversations about the recent revival of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma. First, with the leading ladies of the production, and later in the show, with the leading men. The Oklahoma revival opened on Broadway in April after a sold-out run at St. Anne's Warehouse in Brooklyn. It's a stripped-down, dark, and sensual take on the classic story of a tight-knit community in the territory of Oklahoma just before it becomes a state. The Daniel Fish-directed production is currently running at Circle in the Square. It was nominated for 8 Tonys and won 2 Drama Desk Awards at last Sunday's ceremony for Outstanding Orchestrations and Outstanding Featured Actress in a Musical. That went to Allie Stroker, who plays Ado Annie. I talked to Allie alongside Rebecca Naomi Jones, who plays Lori, and Mary Testa, who plays Aunt Eller, back when the show was at St. Aaron's Warehouse. I began by asking how the classic musical was turned on its head for this particular production. Take a listen.
In this particular show, it's very helpful to sit and listen and be sort of as real as possible, and that and be slow and methodical, and that seems to bring out a lot of the undercurrents of what's going on in this particular production.
Sure, because Aunt Eller is like kind of a boss in this.
Yeah, it's Aunt Eller, by the way.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Aunt Eller.
I know, I'm from the East Coast and I say aunt too, so it's hard.
Yeah, but she's like a boss in a way, like almost like a...
Well, she's the maternal figure.
Like a crime boss towards the end of
it. Well, sort of, yeah, but it's all about circling the wagons.
She wants to make sure she takes care of her people.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
How do you think that Lori is different in this production than in the sort of the traditional production for you?
Well, I think an issue with the way, or an issue that we see with the way that this this musical is often performed is that we unfortunately gloss over a lot of the text with, you know, song and dance and pretty things and as Mary said, not listening. And so I think because of the fact that in our production, we're really sitting in chairs, listening and talking and investigating this text in a more honest way. and because Daniel really didn't want us to sort of define what time period we're in. It's not like we're saying this is now or we're saying this is 75 years ago. We're just sort of existing as we are, people in this room saying these words to each other. What has happened for me is that I, Rebecca/Lori in 2018, being in the middle of these scenes and listening to other people actually, a lot of it is in the moments where I don't have something to say, where I'm in the middle of a scene with other actors, and actors are talking about Lori in front of Lori, but not including Lori in that conversation. I very naturally start to wonder, why isn't Lori speaking? Why doesn't she have something to say? And part of that is a question for the original text, like why didn't you write something for her? Mm-hmm. But also, you know, what does that mean for her internally? And so I think that has informed our version of the production because I think Lori has a lot to say and has a lot to think and feel, and even when I'm not saying it or expressing it broadly, it's inside of me, and so I think that has made her stronger amidst all of this unknowing that she's going through throughout the play.
Yeah, you get the sense that she has a rich internal life.
Yeah.
That she's thinking about everything that these men are saying about her
yes.
and about the time she's in.
Yes.
And that, you know, I thought like, oh, she's a feminist, actually.
Yes.
Her position about going to this dance is she's taking the feminist position. I'm going to go with who I want to go, with whom
yes.
I want to go. And I'm going to decide when I want to decide.
Yes, and I think it's really complicated for her because of the fact that we do also exist in the world of the play as it was written. There's a lot that she knows that she's not allowed to feel that she does feel. And so I think there is this part of her that's taking the feminist edge to it all, but it's also scary for her, and it's not allowed and it's forbidden, and so I think there's just an inner turmoil happening there.
Same for Ato Annie. She's just feeling herself. Like, she's feeling her sexuality, and she's not really that apologetic about it.
Absolutely.
As you were developing the character, what kind of conversations did you have with Daniel?
I think, well, we had many conversations about this character, but I think what is interesting about working on a character like Ato Annie in 2018 is her theme song is I Can't Say No. And we are living in this time where women are speaking out about how important it is to say no. And sometimes I have this inner conflict in me of like, you know, who is this person? And as an actor, it's so important not to judge who you're playing. And I love playing Ato Annie every night because she genuinely doesn't know the answers yet. And she's trying to figure it out. And when she asks a question, in so many of the productions, you see Ato Annie and she can be played so easily as like an airhead.
A ditz, yeah.
Right. And something that I really have tried to stay true to about, you know, Ato Annie in this production is that she just is exploring. So the questions are really, she really wants an answer. She doesn't know, and it's not a caricature. It's a woman who doesn't know and who is celebrating and enjoying exploring her sexuality.
Sarah Holden, Vulture at New York Magazine, wrote this about your two characters, about Laurie and Ato Annie. They appear not as opposites, but as different shades of intense female desire. And the play they inhabit becomes about domestication of that desire, about men's attempts to define, possess, and control it via a binding legal union.
Mm-hmm.
Does that ring true to you guys?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Why?
Because I think there's so much fire in both of these women, and they're both figuring it out and figuring that out for themselves, not even as it pertains to these men. And yet, these men are talking about getting these women, owning these women, having these women.
And driving their stories. And I think what is so cool about working on a traditional piece in this kind of way is that we are allowed to bring our own beliefs and our own truth to these people. And for me, and you know, Laurie and Ato Annie and Ann Eller have scenes together. And when we sing Many a New Day together,
mm-hmm.
it's so exciting to represent these women in maybe a different way than they have before. And I think it's an important piece to be doing right now.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Ali Stroker, Rebecca Naomi Jones, and Mary Testa about the new version of Oklahoma that's at St. Anne's Warehouse. And Mary, tell us a little bit about, the staging is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel like you're in like a barn or like a tractor pull kind of. It's but
yes.
It's very stark and
it's
very
kind of like
open.
A VFW hall.
Yeah, with stadium seating,
mm-hmm.
And everything's very blonde wood.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of your performance, how does the set, what impact does that have on your performance?
Well, in many ways, it's kind of relaxing in that we can sit, we're in the room. Daniel says this all the time. We're all, the community is in the room.
Mm.
So there's no time when you are not listening or experiencing someone else's story. That sort of makes the community stronger. In a way. So it's relaxing because we're sitting, but it's also it's weird to say relaxing. It's probably not the right word, but it's relaxing because there's so much backstory that's going on that you can live that backstory and enrich the story that's happening. So I find that kind of relaxing in a way, mm-hmm. that I'm not pressured to give some kind of performance. I can rely on all of this backstory that I've created to give it an authentic read, to give it an authentic reaction. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How about for you two? What does the staging allow for you to do different than maybe a more traditional setting for Oklahoma?
I will say it does feel like it focuses the room. Mm-hmm. It feels like because we're all, audience included, just sitting there in what feels like a community room, in what feels like a conversation, that it feels like it just centers everyone in the same place, physically and also just in our minds, just ready for the task at hand, which is to have this conversation about this community. But I will say it's really funny to hear you use the word relaxing. Because
I know, it's probably not the right word.
Because I feel the absolute opposite. Like, I feel that the room, at least I felt this way when we first started rehearsing in there and the rainbow colored fringe came down into the room, and so it started to really feel like a little cave. I started to feel a lot of anxiety, and I continue to feel that sometimes, just because the lights are so bright, and it feels like, all right, the time is now. We're addressing whatever it is we're addressing all together.
And I think another unique part of the way that this is staged in the set is that I feel, and I am, being watched on all sides at all times. Mm-hmm. So something that I had a conversation with a good friend who saw the production is that we see every response that you have to what's happening in the room. And as an actor doing 8 shows a week, there's a certain amount of pressure there to be really present and listening to the same thing every single night and allowing yourself to have a truthful response. And something about that I think is unique, because often in a proscenium kind of setting, we only kind of see one side of somebody. Mm-hmm. And the lighting in this is so specific. We talked about it, but the lights are up on the audience, so you can see everyone in the room at all times, which really I think serves this piece in particular. And for me, there are moments that I feel really relaxed and like, oh right, we're all just like sitting around and chatting. And then there are other times where I feel like so vulnerable and really seen, because there's no hiding in that space. I have a moment in my song where I go over and sing to a man at one of the tables. And it's so fun. Every night, it's different. Sometimes they want to interact with me, and it's like they want to be a part of the show. Like the other night, some guy was wearing glasses, and he like took off the glasses and like leaned forward. And then
you're also wearing the tiniest little tank top that's very full.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
You've got quite a push-up bra.
Oh, yeah. And what is fun is to watch how, when you ask someone to kind of enter a scene with you, how they respond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love that because it's different every night.
Let's talk about some of the differences. One of the things I found so interesting was the idea of Judd being sort of vulnerable and not being this big brute, sort of, I thought, like Kurt Cobain kind of style.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally.
You know, and just sort of, some people have said he's more like an incel and misunderstood. And tell me about how that has changed the dynamic of this play that we all know so well, to have the kind of big brutish guy be somebody that seems fragile.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's Patrick's interpretation. It's the mark of a really great piece is that it can be interpreted in many different ways. And I think what Patrick is doing is stunning and bringing another element, but completely understandable element to this character. He can be a big brute, but he can also be this vulnerable outsider. And that's very much a part of what this show is about, is being an outsider and being in the circle and being an outsider. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's very much examined in this as well.
Mm-hmm. Also, let me talk about the casting of you two ladies. Allie, you use a wheelchair. Rebecca, you have hair like mine. You're playing this girl with, maybe this girl with long blonde hair.
Yeah.
Did race come up? Did this come up as part of the conversation?
Not in my initial auditions. It didn't. But I know Amber Gray had played this role before when they did the show 3 years ago, and mm-hmm. she's also a light-skinned brown girl, black girl. And so I didn't have the conversation at that time, but after I had been cast, Daniel and I met for coffee, and he has also brought it up in rehearsal, that for him, it's not, not speaking about me specifically, but for him, the goal is not racially blind casting, because he doesn't believe that that can exist, mm-hmm. and that it's on purpose to have people of color in the piece and to explore how that affects the piece and what we feel and see.
Allie, for you, it's so interesting. I when I was watching you, I thought, like, this makes sense. And your ability to, your chair becomes part of it. I mean, watching you dance is fantastic. And it
Thank
really
you.
Becomes, it is both not noticeable mm-hmm. and completely noticeable.
Yeah, and that's
you know
always,
I mean?
Yeah, that's always my goal as a performer with a disability, is how do I use my disability to enhance this story and this character? And 8:00 Annie is one of these roles that it really works. And not only does it work, but I think it's really refreshing, because often we don't talk about disability and sexuality that often. So it's kind of a new thing to watch somebody with a disability explore their sexuality and what that looks like. And that you don't have to mention the disability for it to be really honest and mm-hmm. really truthful. And I have had a lot of fun sort of exploring how very often, like in love scenes, it's like when there's two able-bodied people, like, oh, this is the way you're going to connect. And we've had to explore, like, okay, like Will Parker, like he straddles and sits on your lap. And with Allie Hackam, I sit on his lap. And what is it like? And what does it mean when a guy gets you out of your chair versus when you stay in your chair? And we've just had all these conversations, and it's been a blast for me to get to do it every single night and tell that story, because it was something that Allie mm-hmm. has had to explore in my own life of like, okay, like two people who are able-bodied usually like hug and kiss standing up with their bodies pressed against each other. Okay, well, I'm sitting, so I can't do that. But how else do we do this? And mm-hmm. obviously, like, I have found this in my own relationship, Allie, like, you know, how I express my sexuality and intimacy. But to do it on stage in front of 350 people every night is exciting and vulnerable and, I think, important.
My guests have been Allie Stroker, Rebecca Naomi Jones, and Mary Testa. They are starring in the Tony-nominated production of Oklahoma, Running at Circle in the Square. Later on in the show, we'll hear from the men of Oklahoma, including the show's director, Daniel Fish. You're listening to All of It on WNYC. We'll be right back.